The Supreme Court of the State of Nevada is now in session. The Honorable Chief Justice Douglas, please.
Good morning, please be seated. Our first case on calendar this morning is Kent versus State Engineer. If the parties are ready to begin the argument, please do so, and if you wish to reserve any time.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stephen Kent for Appellant Robert and Muriel Kent. I would like to reserve 5 minutes.
Thank you.
This case presents four issues, Your Honor, the first of which is what happens when the state engineer does not give notice to an interested party and that party does file a judicial review within the 30-day requirement but not within the 30 days that the notice was issued. The fundamental issue really is one of due process, that being that when an administrative agency issues a decision, isn't notice required to the interested party? And I think there's two parts to that issue. One is that party an interested party? And I would submit to your honors that it is an interested party because the state engineer is responsible for handling the title of water rights.
Mr. Kent, in this particular matter, my understanding of what has been submitted in the posture, we have parties that sold their water rights in this particular case, and I guess the change application was done by the city that they had sold this to. And I don't believe that the Kents informed the state engineer that they would require or request notice of the decision, and the city didn't give them any notice until sometime down the road, 30 days or so after the decision was finalized and notice was given to the city.
That's the problem with that, Your Honor, is the point I was going to make, and that is that the state engineer is in charge of who has title to water rights. In other words, when you make an application to change the point of origin, the first thing that happens is the state engineer looks and sees, do you have title? And you'll see in the record that there is an abstract of the title, reflecting that the seller of the water rights were the Kents, that the buyer was the county, and that clearly giving the state engineer notice that the Kents were the sellers. In addition to that, in the record is also the purchase and sale agreement. And what's critical about this situation is this is the kind of situation that the state engineer deals with every day. That being that a party sells their water rights and, of course, has to go to the state engineer and ask that that transfer be recognized. The state engineer does two things. He checks the title, and he knows from all of these situations that that transfer is not going to occur until he approves the transfer and recognizes the quantity of water rights that are transferred. That's the typical transaction that the state engineer deals with. So the state engineer knew that the Kents were an interested party. He knew that they were the sellers. He knew they had title before. He knew that there was a purchase and sale agreement wherein that the transfer or the money for the transfer would not occur until he approved the quantity of water rights, and that's the typical situation. So to say this argument that the state engineer makes that, well, they had no interest, that's ignoring the practicality of the situation. The situation is the state engineer knows, one, he approves title transfers, two, he knows that the actual transfer doesn't really occur until he changes the beneficial interest or transfers that, and he approves a certain quantity. Then the money is paid in the typical water transaction.
Mr. Kent, are you saying that under the purchase and sale agreement in this case, it was conditional? That at the time the county applied for the change, it didn't actually own the water rights, that the transfer was conditional on this determination?
Exactly, and that's the typical situation in a water rights transfer for where there's a sale. In other words, the buyer doesn't want to buy a pig in a poke.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to buy those water rights that are going to be transferred, and he doesn't know what that will be until a state engineer approves that transaction.
Okay, there's one other problem that I'd like you to address, if you would. Nevada statutes do not require the state engineer to give notice to anybody, including someone who pursues the change application of the decision. If there is no statutory requirement for notice to the applicant, then how do you get what forms the legal basis for notice to you?
There's two bases, Justice Hardesty. One is NRS 233B125. That's the Administrative Procedure Act. That requires that every decision by an administrative agency, that there be notice given. And I'm sure that applies to the state engineer, just like every other state agency. In addition to that, this court has adopted certain due process requirements. That being that, just like this court, or the requirements that you put on parties to lawsuits, before the appeal time starts to run, you require that notice be given to that party. And that same principle should be applied to the state engineer. If the state engineer knows of an interested party, which the Kents were, and he knows that when he issues his decision, if he wants that decision to be binding on that party, he has to give them notice. That's basic due process, and it's required in 233B125.
So in effect, your argument is that at the time the state engineer considered the change application, the Kents were the owners of the water rights.
Correct, Your Honor. They had a beneficial interest, a conditional interest, and that's typical, and the state engineer knew that. In addition to that, the facts are a little bit unusual here in that we corresponded frequently with the state engineer. We even corresponded with Mr. Wohls, his counsel. So he knew we were involved. We were supplying information. He was communicating with us about information that he wanted. The other issue, of course, is the venue issue or the jurisdictional issue. The state engineer argues that because we filed in Washoe County rather than Churchill County, that's a jurisdictional issue. And I don't think that analysis is correct, because it's the Nevada Constitution that decides what courts have jurisdiction over. And Article 6, Section 6, says that the district courts have jurisdiction over anything that the justice courts do not have jurisdiction over. And so when the legislature adopts the water rights statute, the 533-450, can the legislature really limit the constitutional jurisdiction of the district court? I don't think so. In addition to that, the legislature has conflicting statutes.
Wasn't the venue transferred by the Washoe County District Court to the Third Judicial District?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Judge Perry transferred the case, recognizing, I think, that argument that venue should be transferred rather than dismissal to Churchill County. And then it was Churchill County that dismissed the case, saying we don't have jurisdiction. In addition to Article...
Wasn't that because of the time, the 30-day issue, is what the basis for Churchill County's decision?
No, I think that Judge Huff decided it on two bases. One, he said, I don't have jurisdiction, and two, it wasn't filed within the 30 days, so I think it was both issues.
Okay.
The other point on that issue, the court's jurisdiction versus the venue change, is that the legislature, in addition to adopting 533-450, adopted 13.020 and 13.050. 13.020 says that an aggrieved party to an administrative decision can do a judicial review, and there's no imposition of any requirement of where that can be filed. So that statute allows for a judicial review at any district.
So this could have been filed in Clark County, in your view.
My point is we have two conflicting statutes. We have 533-450 saying it has to be filed in the county where the water right is. 13.020 says it could be filed anywhere. And then 13.050 says it can be transferred. It should not be dismissed to the appropriate county. And that's what the court has repeatedly done in circumstances where there are somebody says the venue is incorrect or the location is incorrect. The last two points I want to make really quickly before I save my last 5 minutes is, in addition to that, the state engineer imposes what he calls a duty, that being that a new, when you apply to transfer your water rights, he says, oh, you have to reprove that you had a beneficial interest. That's illegal, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in my final minutes. And in addition to that, he did not have substantial basis for his decision that he made. Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Michael Wohl, Senior Deputy Attorney General for the State of Nevada, appearing today on behalf of the Nevada State Engineer, Jason King, who is present in court today. The central issue in this appeal is whether the state engineer has a constitutional obligation to provide the Kents with notice of his decision on application 71869. The direct response to that question is no, he has no such obligation.
Do you have a constitutional duty to give notice to Churchill County?
I don't know that that's ever been directly addressed by the court. Of course, under the facts of this case, that's precisely what the state engineer did.
Is that the practice of the state engineer?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Absolutely. When application 71869 was filed, Churchill County was the owner of record of the water rights at issue here. Under the records of the state engineer, the Kents had no further ownership interest in those rights. Notice was given to Churchill County as the owner and as the applicant. Application 71869 was filed by Churchill County and not by the Kents. This is not a case where an owner or an applicant has not been given notice.
Well, does the record reflect that there was a deed in the file showing the transfer, or was the purchase agreement the evidence of the change in ownership? And according to Mr. Kent here, the purchase agreement suggested that the transfer of the water rights was conditional on the change of use application.
The record does contain a deed. That was necessary for the report of conveyance. And in fact, the records of the state engineer's office show the title of this right from the beginning until it wound up in the hands of Churchill County. Every one of those changes requires a deed. My recollection, Your Honor, is that the purchase agreement is in fact not in the records of the state engineer's office. It may well be in the records of this appeal.
Mm-hmm.
I will not state that with absolute uncertainty. I made a quick review as he made that statement, and I could not see it. Mm-hmm. Now, that having been said, Churchill County wrote to the state engineer's office and made a representation, made some statements about this change application. Churchill County stated specifically, if I may, that the Kents were providing testimony or any necessary proof to establish the annual duty ascribed to the water rights, and that pursuant to a purchasing agreement, and not because they maintained an interest in the right. Churchill County represented to the state engineer that the Kents were acting as witnesses and as former owners in this case. No authority establishes a right of a former owner or of a witness in a proceeding to receive notice of an action of the state engineer. In fact, the two letters written by the Kents in June and December of 2005 indicate that they were providing information to the state engineer at the request of Churchill County. To the extent it can be said there's been any failure of duty in this case, it would have to be said that that occurred on the part of Churchill County in not informing the party with whom it had a contractual relationship that the state engineer had made a decision. Some of the responsibility for this failure also must lie with the Kents. They could have at any time requested that the state engineer provide them notice of his decision. The state engineer has a form.
Mr. Wall, do you agree that 233B imposes on the state engineer the obligation to give notice of his decisions to applicants?
there's an obligation, I think it falls or arises under constitutional requirements, Your Honor. The state engineer has been expressly excluded from Chapter 233B, and I believe that's in Section 0.010, mm-hmm. subparagraph J, but I could be mistaken as to the actual section.
That's why I asked the question. I wanted your response.
The Kents never requested the state engineer provide them notice. A simple form available from the state engineer's office, available online, would have guaranteed that they had gotten that notice. Under the Kents' theory of this case, that they were former owners and then the state engineer therefore knew about them, under that theory, it means that the appeal period in this case is still open because there are other previous owners of this right who have not been given notice that the state engineer has acted. Obviously, this will create an impossible situation for the state engineer, place an entirely undue burden on the state engineer to review the files, to provide notices to persons who are no longer interested, may no longer be alive, for no other reason than to guarantee they have that right, when in fact, the obligation of notice in this instance lies upon those who assert they have an interest and want to be noticed. I would direct the court's attention to its decision in Department of Conservation and Natural Resources versus Foley. The question in that case was whether the state engineer was required to provide notice of cancellation of a water right permit to owners whose interests did not appear on the state engineer's records. Factual circumstances were slightly different. However, this court concluded that nothing in the statutory scheme required the division to give notice of cancellation to any persons whose interests in the water rights were not on file with the state engineer. And I quote, therefore, under the 1995 amendments to Chapter 533, water rights holders of record with the division remain the only interested parties entitled to notice of cancellation of water rights permits. That basic proposition that a party with an interest in the outcome of a proceeding in front of the state engineer has an obligation to provide the state engineer with the information needed to provide them with notice. This proposition, this principle, I think is also found or expressed in NRS 533-386 subparagraph 5. And there it states that a purchaser of a water right is not entitled to any legal notices from the state engineer until a report of conveyance is confirmed. We have the opposite situation here somewhat. In this case, a report of conveyance was confirmed, giving title to Churchill County. It follows once that report of conveyance is confirmed that Churchill County becomes the party entitled to notice. Mention has been made of my personal conversations with counsel regarding the Kent water rights. I am not housed in the state engineer's office. I do not participate in the state engineer's day-to-day administrative activities. The only act I took in this case was to take the permit number and to call the state engineer's office to inquire about the status of the permit. In order for the communications with me to have any kind of significance in this case, it would have to be my knowledge regarding Mr. Kent, I suppose, would have to be imputed to the state engineer's office, even though I had no conversations with him about that. At the same time, the state engineer's knowledge would have to be imputed to me, even though I do not have access to or reviewed any of those files. That conversation had no impact or no consequences in this case and did not put the state engineer on notice of the Kent's interests. The Kents have asserted here that, first, the timing period can in some way be waived. It's undisputed that they filed late. That was, in fact, the basis for dismissal in this case. The timing provisions of Nevada's water code are jurisdictional in nature, and this court concluded as much in the Desert Valley Water Company decision, where it noted that timely notice to the state engineer satisfy the jurisdictional requirements. This is consistent with general appellate practice. It's also consistent with this court's interpretation of the Administrative Procedures Act. This court strictly construes the procedural requirements of the water code and has done so consistently and has consistently held that water procedures are special in character and are limited to those specifically provided in the statute. There is no justification and no case that supports the idea that these requirements are not jurisdictional and can be loosely interpreted. The Kents have also asserted here that the choice of court provision of Nevada's water code is not jurisdictional and that the venue statute somehow controls. Again, the statute specifically requires that action must be initiated in the proper court of the county in which the matters are affected or a portion thereof are situated. This is mandatory language. It is unambiguous, and this court has held where the code has clear, mandatory, unambiguous language, it must be followed, and the procedures are limited to those provided in the water code. NRS 13.050 and the other venue statutes are inapplicable here. There is a conflict between that statute and the water code. They're inconsistent. The venue statute allows for transfer. The water code does not, but makes a choice of court jurisdictional in nature. Where two statutes conflict, the more specific statute controls over the general. This is a basic tenet of statutory construction. Once the Second Judicial District determined that it was without jurisdiction, and it stated specifically that it was without jurisdiction to hear the Kent's appeal, once it determined that it was without jurisdiction, the only authority that it had was to dismiss that appeal. It had no authority to transfer. The Kents have attempted here and in their briefs to argue the merits of this appeal today. The district court, both the Second Judicial District and the Third Judicial District, dismissed on jurisdictional grounds. The merits of this appeal have not been addressed below.
Didn't Washoe County transfer the proceedings to the Third Judicial District?
The order of the Second Judicial District is unusual because it stated that it was without jurisdiction, dismissed the case, and transferred it in the same order, which hence is my point that it had no authority. Once it determined it was without jurisdiction, it had no authority, in fact, to transfer. But the merits of this case have not been presented below and therefore cannot be raised here for the first time. However, I think it is noteworthy that or important that the issue of the state engineer's authority to establish an actual duty of water be addressed here. Every change application filed with the state engineer requires him to determine whether that change will conflict with existing rights or threatens to prove detrimental to the public interest. If the state engineer grants a change for an amount in excess of that originally appropriated, it is the equivalent of a new appropriation of water from that groundwater basin, albeit with an early 1960 priority date. This will conflict with other persons' rights. The measure of a right is its beneficial use. That is the basic tenet of Nevada and all Western water law. Consequently, the state engineer is required by NRS 533-370 to look at a water right and determine if the actual quantity of water has been established. A mere diversion rate does not establish a quantity of water. It's the rate at which water may be pumped. The analogy is to miles per hour, in my mind anyway, not being an engineer. If I asked you how far you travel today and you said you were traveling 50 miles an hour, that really doesn't completely answer my question. There's a huge difference if you've been driving for 2 hours or 20. Similarly, with a rate of diversion, there's a significant difference if 0.52 cubic feet per second is pumped for 200 days a year, 12 hours a day, or if it's pumped for 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. And so having a certificate that merely states that diversion rate does not quantify the right. And the state engineer consistently, when these change applications arise, takes a step to quantify the actual amount of water they are entitled to. This practice has been acknowledged by the Nevada legislature. In 2003, SB 336 was passed by the legislature, and in Section 17 required the state engineer in Clark County with certain groundwater rights to review his files, to find those water rights that were expressed only in diversion rate, and to quantify them. That's found in Section 17 of that bill. It was a two-year, it was not codified because it sunsetted in 2 years. He had 2 years to get the task done, and which he did. It established a procedure where all of the parties were allowed to then comment, review, and be given notice of what the state engineer was doing. The state engineer is required to quantify those rights. Finally, in conclusion, on the issue of the substantiality of evidence, the state engineer didn't merely get information from Washoe County about the amount of water used by retail outlets. He also considered a significant amount of information about the actual fixtures that were used in the Kent's grocery store or similar fixtures. That can be found in the record from page 200 to about 235. In addition, he considered the evidence provided by the Kent. There is substantial evidence in the record supporting the state engineer's decision, although it should be noted again that that issue is not yet before this court. If there are no further questions, thank you.
This is not an appeal from a district court trial. Remember, this is a judicial review, so the district court was just reviewing the administrative decision. They don't make findings of fact. So this court is reviewing the appeal to the district court. So this court is not bound by that decision. This court has in front of it all of the record, and the Kents raised in their petition for judicial review that the state engineer did not make a correct decision in two regards. One is the state engineer's deciding to impose the requirement that somebody who's already established a beneficial use and used the beneficial use for 40 plus years has to reprove beneficial use. That requirement is not in any regulation, it's not in any statute, and Mr. Wolz's reference to some statute that applied in Las Vegas is, it's not authority. The state engineer just adopts that and proceeds with that. In this instance, that application is unfair because the Kents retired from their grocery store and sold their water rights and made the application and could not go back and measure the amount of water rights that they had. But the state engineer in 1960 issued a certificate, and that certificate says that they have 0.52 CFS. The state engineer, on his own inventory, had the record as 376 acre feet for that water basin. The state engineer admitted that that was a quantity of water right that the Kents had. But when they apply to change, after they can't go back and remeasure their water, after the state engineer has issued a certificate saying the quantity that you have is 0.52, then he tries to change and make them come back and prove that. That is improper. There's no authority for that. There's no regulation for that. And it's unfair in this application. In addition, the state engineer did not have substantial evidence for his decision because all that was done is somebody sent an email. In an administrative decision, the rules of law, of like any other civil action, apply by a case law that this court adopted. That being that we can't just go out and send an email and rely on an email as a basis for a decision. In the face of evidence that shows that independent evidence, that evidence being from manufacturers, that the quantity of water that was used was 376 plus acre feet.
Could you return to the point of what the record shows with respect to ownership of the water rights at the time of the application? You're going ahead into the merits, and the state sharply disputes what you told us in your opening remarks, which is that the purchase agreement showed a retained interest in the Kents that would have entitled them to notice. Can you tell me where in the record it establishes that representation?
The purchase agreement is the joint record at page 419.
Was that introduced to the state engineer, the purchase agreement?
I was just looking at that during the during my time, and it doesn't look like that is in the record that the state engineer had.
So the state engineer theoretically wouldn't have been on notice of it until they subsequently saw the purchase agreement.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. But, of course, they did have the deed transferring, and they have the abstract of title.
But that showed title in Churchill County, correct?
It had a deed showing transfer to Churchill County, and it had an abstract of title showing that the seller was the Kent. And then, of course,
conditional would be indicated in the records in the state engineer's office.
Pardon me?
Nothing indicating that there was a conditional interest or a retained interest would be in the state engineer's records.
Your Honor, I just don't think that's a disingenuous argument, because the state engineer knows, and that's what the state engineer does every day, that he's acknowledging these transfers. He's transferring the point of diversion, and nothing can happen until that transfer is done.
But what would indicate there's a retained interest in the Kents?
Pardon?
What would indicate that there's a retained interest of any kind with the Kents?
The deed. I think the deed shows a transfer. In other words, he knows that it's being transferred, and he knows from his procedure, that being that the state engineer has to transfer the point of diversion in order for that water right to be transferred. And that knowledge, he knows that and does with that every day. And to me, that reflects knowledge on his part that until that transfer occurs, the actual transfer is not complete.
Well, Mr. Kent, not every water right that is deeded is transferred. The point of diversion may remain the same. If the party bought the property, there would be no need for a change in diversion. So your suggestion that in every instance where there's a deed, there's the deed itself doesn't recognize the transfer, you'd have to go based on a change of point of diversion or change of use, would be completely inconsistent with the dictates of the Water Code.
Well, but only in those transactions. I agree there may be some transactions where the change of point of diversion would not be necessary, but when there is a change in the point of diversion, the state engineer knows when there's also a deed that until that change in the point of diversion occurs, in as it did in this instance, that transfer is not complete.
And thank you for your argument.
Mr. Chief Justice,
yes.
I was making notes, and I had a question for Mr. Walls, and I'm asking your permission to pose a question to
Let's
Mr.
pose
Walls.
Our question to Mr. Walls, and we'll see whether or not Mr. Kent needs to respond to his answer.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Walls, are the Kents interested parties for purposes of the petition for judicial review under the Water Code?
I'm hesitating because interested party is a term of art in the practice of the state engineer, but applies only in proceedings before the state engineer.
Well, if we go to the statute itself, it says any person feeling aggrieved by any order or decision of the state engineer, they have a right.
A right to appeal, certainly. The state engineer has never, well, I guess first to clarify the interested party question that you've posed. In front of the state engineer, there is a status as a party referred to, or was referred to as interested party status. That had to be requested in proceedings before the state engineer.
Okay.
And I would assume that an interested party there would have received notice.
Which leads to my next question. Are the Kents an aggrieved party for purposes of the petition for judicial review? And I'm also wondering whether the record reflects any challenge by the state engineer before Judge Huff as to their status as an aggrieved party. I assume that was not the case.
The state engineer did not argue in these proceedings that they were not an aggrieved party. I hesitate because the state engineer has taken a broad interpretation of aggrieved party for purposes of these proceedings.
So I guess that this leads to my final question.
Okay.
Assume, if you will, for purposes of this question, that the Kents fit within that broad definition of aggrieved party. Why wouldn't the aggrieved party be entitled to notice under the Due Process Clause?
well, it's an impossibility of identification on the part of the state engineer. The interpretation taken by the state engineers to an aggrieved party is anyone who is aggrieved, whether their name appears anywhere. They walk in off the street and file a petition for judicial review. That's the state engineer's interpretation. I would note that the district courts from time to time have dismissed petitions for judicial review because someone did not participate before the state engineer. This court has not addressed that question, to my knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Chief.
Thank you.
Mr. Kinn, I'll give you 2 minutes if you want to respond to anything that was stated.
Thank you. I think the problem with that analysis is it arises from the assumption that there is this strict application of the timing and the venue rules, and that's not what this court has done. This court has repeatedly made the analysis that we're going to look at whether or not a substantial right was affected and whether or not there's a beneficial use. And that's in the American National Insurance and the preferred equities. So this court has introduced equitable considerations. And we're not asking that the entire scheme of notice be changed. We're just saying that in this instance, its application is unfair and violates due process. And the analysis should be, was the state engineer's substantial right affected? It's 5 days. The state engineer, there's no difference to the state engineer for that 5 day period. So under that application, and clearly there's a beneficial interest, that being that we're transferring this water right to a municipality which has the highest priority for beneficial use. So under that analysis, no substantial right was affected, and there's a beneficial use. The court has consistently applied equitable principles to forgive where notice requirements were not complied with. So that should really be the court's analysis. Thank you.
Thank you. The court thanks both counsel for arguments this day. Water is a very vital issue in the state of Nevada, so anything that gleans the appropriate resolution of water disputes is appropriate before this court, so we thank you.